Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, this week was so close to being an outstanding movie week. Two out of the three films I saw were outstanding, and one of them was almost good. But we split up this week.
We did.
I saw the biggest release, Tomb Raider. You saw the second biggest release.
Love, Simon.
We both saw The Death of Stalin. I saw Foxtrot. You saw most of...
I saw a half hour of Foxtrot. Oh, and about a little bit of Leaning Into the Wind, a documentary about a British artist that I had actually never heard of before, but Artie Chick had.
So. All right. Well, so I didn't go wine tonight. I went beer, and I've already seen by the look of your face what you think of this beer. But
it's
see
a
if you can tie
beer.
It.
Beer. It is called Totalitarian Imperial Russian Stout. And if I had to take a leap of faith, I would say that this beer spoke to you because it relates to probably what will be your favorite movie of the week.
It will. It relates to the death of Stalin. And I just love the back of this bottle is so Soviet. You know, it's bespoke totalitarianism for the proletariat diaspora. And it's brilliant when you read the back of this bottle.
And if you drink it, it could very well kill you. So maybe we're in London this week.
I don't know. It's a 10.6% stout, so I'm only having one of these.
Yeah, and I had a little shot glass worth. So that was quite an interesting brew there, Charlie.
But we'll get to that. But first, I want to start with the biggest film of the week, which technically many people have already seen a version of, because I don't know what you call it. Do you call it a reboot? Do you call it a remake? But they're resurrecting the video game franchise of Tomb Raider. I remember 2001's Lara Croft Tomb Raider starring Angelina Jolie, and it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. It's a terrible movie, but it made over $100 million, so they made a second one, which nobody saw. But I saw the new iteration of it starring Alicia Vikander, one of the most famous Swedes on the planet. And she is not Angelina Jolie's Lara Croft. She's her own. Angelina Jolie didn't get dirty. She was graceful. She was rich. She spent her time practicing fighting against killer robots in her country palace. Alicia Vikander's poor. She gets dirt under her fingernails. She gets beat half to death and stabbed. These are two different Lara Crofts.
Good times. Sorry,
and this is the better version.
Okay.
She could be a role model for both girls and boys in our year of 2018. The problem with Tomb Raider is the story. It's just rote. I've seen this before. It's by the numbers adventure. She goes to her dad's been missing for 7 years. She's the only one on Earth who believes he's still alive. And by gosh darn it, she's going to find him. And she ends up on this remote island off the east coast of Japan in the middle of nowhere. There's an evil witch queen who must not be disturbed. But you know movie rules. The evil witch queen will be disturbed.
Of course she will.
She did good. She did well. It's directed by Roar Uthog, a Norwegian. I've seen one of his movies. This is his first English language film, so I saw one of his Norwegian movies called The Wave a couple years ago when a tsunami wipes out half of Norway. So he's good at water, and there's some water in here. People call it action-packed. She's hanging, she's jumping, she's swinging her pickaxe, and she uses a bow and arrow instead of Lara Croft's regular pistols, which is nice. It's a good break. They set it up to become a franchise. They set it up for a sequel. And there wasn't enough in it to make me want to say, ooh, okay, this is very interesting, go out and see it. No, it's mediocre.
That seems to be the common theme I was hearing among anyone who had seen it. I saw a different movie the next night, and when I asked people how Tomb Raider was, they all had that same reaction. They were like, it was fine.
That's your catchphrase.
They stole my catchphrase, and they all just said, it was fine. So they didn't hate it, but I got this overwhelming sense that there was really no need for it. And that Alicia Vikander is, people like her. She's very watchable. I mean, people know her from, she won an Oscar.
She's an Oscar winner. She's an Oscar winner, Alicia Vikander. She's an Oscar winner.
Yeah, so she was in The Danish Girl and in the movie you did not like with the, was it Light Between the Oceans?
The Light Between the Oceans, where she met her future husband, Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, so.
But I loved her in Ex Machina, where we all first met her.
Yeah, so I think I'm glad she held her own in this, but it is certainly, I think, one of those films that's best served for people who have played or know the video game or just were very eager for a remake and maybe will follow her into future films in this franchise if it does well enough. But since I just never really knew of the game anyway and I have no recollection of whether I saw the Angelina Jolie version, this is not one that I feel any compulsion to go back and find.
I figured if anybody, you would remember the first one because it had a young Daniel Craig with an American accent.
Maybe I would have remembered that, but I don't think I ever actually saw it.
My catchphrase will be, it's almost fine.
It's almost fine.
Like with a few tweaks, it could have been fine.
It's fine enough.
All right, our next film I didn't see, but it's called Love, Simon, and this has got buzz around it because apparently it's the first of its kind. Why is this breaking ground?
Well, it's breaking ground because it's the first time that a major studio actually backed a film where there is a gay teen as the protagonist. We've seen, you see the smaller films, Moonlight, and, indie type films, Call Me By Your Name. So it's not that you haven't seen a gay teen in a lead, playing the lead in a film. But in this case, it's actually it's like a romantic comedy and drama, and it plays to a mainstream audience, and it's very, very good. You could be watching a John Hughes ensemble teen flick, just sort of updated for the modern era with kids really communicating via text and Snapchat and online. And so the whole point of Love, Simon is there's this kid who he's a high school senior and he's popular at school. He's cute. He's got a great circle of friends. He has like the most Norman Rockwellian, great, awesome family ever, parents and sister. And he's got this secret that he's gay. And so the whole film is really about how his secret is revealed and why, and a love story about him trying to find this other student that he's been communicating with online that is also gay. And so it's just basically a typical romantic comedy and drama that just happens to be about a gay high school kid.
And was it good?
It was very good. And everyone around me enjoyed it. It is one of those things where there's heartwarming moments. People were cheering. The audience was really into it. And it stars this guy, Nick Robinson. And he was in like The Kings of Summer and Jurassic World and that god-awful Everything Everything. Remember that
one? I remember this guy. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
And Everything Everything was terrible.
Yeah. But that one, people don't seem to be bringing that up as part of his repertoire. But he's still adorable, and he's very cute to watch. And it's got Jennifer Garner and Josh Duhamel as his parents, and they are just the world's best parents. When he does come out to them, they basically give the kind of speeches that
did they give a Michael Stuhlbarg?
No, very different, and it's just still understanding and compassionate in that same way that Call Me By Your Name, that scene, did have with Michael Stuhlbarg, but this is a more lighthearted movie from beginning to end. And it's just, there are some standouts. The whole supporting cast is fun. There's a drama teacher who's she's very sarcastic and is trying to lead the kids, some very untalented kids, in a production of Cabaret. And Tony Hale plays the vice president who's thinks he's going to be really cool with the students he's just too hip to be square, but he's really just sort of nerdy. The circle of friends around Simon, they're all really good. So it's just one of those movies where everybody kind of comes out and just feels really good about what they saw.
Well, you had me at John Hughes. I mean, if you describe a movie as John Hughes, like that makes me want to see it. We're talking Breakfast Club here, people.
It's sweet and funny, and it's just got some poignancy. And it's based on a young adult novel, Simon Versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda by Becky Albertalli. So the young adult crowd that maybe have read her books will certainly want to see this. And and the director, it was actually directed by the same guy who's behind, well, he directed Life as We Know It with Katherine Heigl and Josh Duhamel back in 2010.
Did not see it.
So it was like a romantic comedy. And
really? A rom-com with Katherine Heigl? No kidding.
No, I know. But so he knows that kind of vibe. But he also, it's Greg Berlanti, and he's also behind Riverdale, The Flash, Supergirl. So he knows how to cater to that young adult audience. And so this movie does that great job of catering to the young adult audience, but also providing something that could be very entertaining and valuable to a much broader audience. And so considering 20th Century Fox is people think it's taking a gamble. I don't see why it was such a big gamble, because to me it's probably a very good script. You got a very good cast and you made a very good movie. And, you know, it'll be great when there's the day where that kind of movie gets made and it doesn't happen. You know, you don't have to put that little caveat that, and it's got a gay teen protagonist.
Well, the transition between Love, Simon and our next film, The Death of Stalin, is Tony Hale. I'm using Tony Hale. He was in Veep. And he was in Veep, and the creator of Veep is Armando Iannucci. Armando Iannucci directed and adapted the French graphic novel from which it comes, The Death of Stalin. We're talking comedic satire here, folks, and satire is a little bit different than your standard comedy. I want to define it for you. Satire is when you take a real-life event, and you bend it, and you twist it, and you exaggerate it. Think Monty Python. They used to do it very well. And, folks, The Death of Stalin is the new cinematic gold standard of satire. I gave this film 4 stars, and I rarely do that. This is the best film by far of 2018. It's not even close. The Death of Stalin is outstanding, and it takes place in that 10-day time frame where Joseph Stalin had a stroke and died in 1953, and the political struggle of those deputies behind him vying to take power. One of them is Nikita Khrushchev. And who would you think the worst person ever to play Khrushchev? Someone you think of this guy who is like, he can't play Khrushchev. Steve Buscemi. And Iannucci made a very wise choice. He said, don't do Russian accents. Keep your accents. So you have Americans and you have Brits in there. And Steve Buscemi is Nikita Khrushchev talking in this nasally New York accent. General Zhukov, played by Jason Isaacs, is Yorkshire. And Nikita Khrushchev's chief rival, the chief torturer, Beria, Lavrenty Beria, is played by Simon Russell Beale. He's a famous stage actor, but if you watch TV and Showtime, you know him from Penny Dreadful. I don't know exactly your opinion on it yet, Hannah, but I was bowled over by how hysterical this film was and spot on. And it's so spot on. It's like I could believe this is how it really happened.
I wasn't quite so blown away, but I did laugh. I found it very enjoyable. Certainly, it's political satire. And you mentioned Monty Python. One of the other people in it was a Monty Python comedian, Michael Palin.
Michael Palin.
Molotov. And, I actually looked up, did you know that the Molotov,
the cocktails,
poor man's grade, but it was meant as like an insult to him by the Finns. But the weirdest thing to me, though, watching this was, I hate to have everything now through the lens of this, like, Me Too movement.
I know where you're
movement.
Going with this, and it was filmed way before that happened.
I know, but I was like, oh, so they didn't feel the need to do a Kevin Spacey kind of thing, but Jeffrey Tambor
didn't have the money for that.
I know, but so, it was just a little strange to me when you have, he's wickedly funny, but you have Tambor as Malenkov, who's the guy who succeeded Stalin. And, and all that's important to him, and this is what's very timely from a political sense, are the optics of everything that's going on. He's most concerned about, get me the little girl that's in this portrait. I want to wave from the balcony with her and wearing a girdle to make sure that his figure looks trim. And so that's all he really cares about, is all this is going on. I mean, it is. It's wicked funny. It has some timeless stuff in it. But didn't we see some other movie recently where we kind of thought it was odd that it was like a Russian movie and everyone spoke English?
Well, they do that just because they want to. Probably Red Sparrow.
Maybe that's what it was. But it is kind of unusual when you realize, like, here's this whole thing and it's taking place in Moscow in 1953. And, you know, you're meeting all these different people, but it's all done in English. So, you know, to me, that kind of, I guess it doesn't really matter since it's you're doing satire. But I'm glad that it was in English because these actors really needed to be speaking in their native language to really land the kind of zingers that they really do. And it is. It's just, it was like dry funny.
And it's got best adapted screenplay written all over it. And the beginning is a live concert. It's a concerto of like the Moscow Symphony, and it's going out live over the radio. And Stalin calls up. He says, "That was really good. I want a recording." And the terror is so real. So many people get exiled and are executed under this totalitarian terrorist regime that the radio man runs out of the booth and orders the doors locked and everybody to sit down. You have to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to record it and pretend like that we were recording it. And he's balancing comedy and tragedy here because there are scenes which are not funny. People arrive from the countryside into Moscow for the funeral, and there's a massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that part's not funny. What the after effects are funny on who or who does not get the blame for it. And Molotov's wife comes back, and he's embracing her, and he can't believe his beloved wife is still alive. But at the same time, he's still saying she's so treacherous. Stalin was right to send her to her death, but oh, how I love her.
Yeah,
and it's just I love this movie so much.
Yeah, the only real queasy moment, though, is when they're removing Stalin's brain. That got a little ick.
And they couldn't try to bring him back to life with a respirator because it was American made, and they couldn't. They hedged on whether or not to call a doctor because all the doctors were exiled or executed. And so there's no more good doctors left. And it's like, would we get in trouble then if we called a bad doctor? But if he lived, then he's a good doctor. And it's
very funny, and it's very relatable, and it's fascinating. And to see at the beginning, there's certain, I think there's parallels even to North Korea's great leader right now, when everybody is just trying to humor him, and they go along with whatever the leader says, and he's such a great person. And then when he's dead, they really don't know what to make of it, and whether how they can respond, and whether they can suddenly reveal their true feelings. But there are some funny moments at the beginning when Stalin is actually still alive, where they're all kind of just, you know, willing to do anything at his whim to avoid getting on the death list.
So go find The Death of Stalin. Yeah, seriously, it's by far the best film this week, and really the best film of the year. You cannot miss this film.
I wouldn't go that far. I think, you know, it helps if you have some knowledge of political science history on your side.
Just know, yeah, well, you need to know Stalin was a bad dude.
Yeah, you need to know a little bit, but certainly, yes, if you know anything, and if you're a political science and political satire buff, then this is a great movie for you.
All right, our next film is almost just as good. It's not as good, but it's not funny. It's a drama slash tragedy. But some of it's actually comedic right in the center. I'm talking about Foxtrot. It's from Israel. It was Israel's nomination for the Best Foreign Film category. It's from a director called Samuel Mouse. And I know him from 2009, 2010. He did a movie called Lebanon, a very intense, gritty war film about the 1982 Israel-Lebanon war. In real life, he was a gunner in a tank, and he made a film about his experiences, and it was extremely intense and sweaty and claustrophobic. So he's back now with Foxtrot, also takes place in Israel, and it swept the Israeli Film Academy Awards, won every award you could win. It came in second at last year's Venice Film Festival. And it was in all the montages last year. Whenever you see a montage of 2017 films, you saw Foxtrot if you saw a young soldier dancing in the middle of a desert with his assault rifle to, like, jazz music.
Yeah.
That's Foxtrot. And it's like a three-act play. First act is Mom and Dad answer the door. There's a soldier there. Your son is dead. Your son is dead. They knock Mom out with a sedative, and Dad just goes, you know, starts to put together the logistics. It's very sterile. It's very black and white. It's very morose. What do I do now that my only son is dead. And at the end of Act 1, sorry, we were wrong. Your son is alive. It was another boy who's dead with the same name. Cut to Act 2. Now we're following Jonathan. We're following him at his just middle of nowhere checkpoint. They're guarding a supply route, and the only people that seem to cross his checkpoint are a camel and some Palestinians that are going back, I guess, to the West Bank. And there's some very political and cultural events that take place at that checkpoint. It's a very artistic point. Their son is an artist. He's a very good drawer. And the scenes, the episodes that unfold at this checkpoint in the middle of the film almost are dreamlike because it's kind of from his artistic point of view. And the third part is kind of from the mom's point of view. It's full of feelings, full of emotions. So I really like how he separated three parts of the film. And it's a very moving film. I really got a lot out of watching Foxtrot. I would have liked to have seen it get wider exposure before award season. It really didn't get talked about really until its release now. And Foxtrot's based on somewhat of a true life story for the director. He was tired of his daughter waking up late for school and taking a taxi to school because she missed the bus. And so he makes her go take the bus one day, and on the radio he hears that bus, a suicide bomber blew it up and killed dozens of people. And for an hour he thought his daughter was dead. And it turns out she had just missed the bus. And so he wrote a screenplay out of that. Hannah, Foxtrot is a fascinating film.
Yeah, I definitely want to see it. I got the link really late today and I started watching. So I got through the first act and it was hard. I mean, but it was gripping. And so I can't even imagine, based on your description, it sounds like it certainly takes a turn for the second act and then another turn for the third. So I definitely want to go back and watch it. I think it's been somewhat divisive in Israel from what I've heard. But usually, as is often the case, the biggest backlash usually comes from people who actually haven't seen the movie.
Well, it shows Palestinian civilians in a sympathetic light and mm-hmm. how they're treated at this checkpoint. And that's what I'm guessing is the backlash here.
Well, and just also how it's treating that maybe the IDF doesn't come off in
they
the
don't.
Best light
the army
either.
Comes off as like any other military, just bungling its way through.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's a very, very sensitive, you know, it's just a sensitive point with the Israelis. So it's tough to find out if it can strike a balance, that it can be you know, that it won't be too divisive, and that some people, you know, that people can really just watch it with an open mind. It was fascinating when I first started watching it, though, is to me, the lead actor, the father, was really dominates that first act. And he reminded me so much of, he just had that same shell-shocked, grief-stricken kind of look that Steve Carell has throughout the movie
Last Flag Flying,
where he's going to bury his son.
It's an interesting
correlation. They
there.
Looked so similar. They just had a very similar vibe and physical appearance. And so that's sort of the first thing I thought of when I was just seeing this guy in his quiet grief. And so I will definitely finish watching the last two acts. And
if only for the second act, that's the act that people are going to remember this film for.
Yeah.
Third's just kind of a wrap-up.
Well, come on. I can't
but
just
you, well, you have to watch
I'm
the third.
Like, come on. I'm not going to stop.
There's a twist ending, so you do have to watch the whole thing. Yeah. And any other week, Foxtrot would easily be the best film of the week. Easily. It's not its fault that in the Washington, D.C. market, it's being released the same week as The Death of Stalin.
Well, and I would, I think you didn't see Love, Simon, so
I guarantee you that would come in third.
I don't think so. I think Love, Simon would come in first among a lot of...
But not with me.
Not with
There's
you.
There's no way.
Oh, of course not with you.
No, come on.
But I think you would have been surprised. I actually think you would have liked it.
No, I believe
it.
You that I probably would have liked and give it a thumbs up and maybe three stars or whatever to Love, Simon. But these, you know, I like films
I know,
that really
you need
just
to champion.
Move me, you
I know.
Know
you are the champion of these of these smaller films, and so that's great because you know I think.
Forget this? Of course, you have to see The Death of Stalin. Every American has to see The Death of Stalin. It was banned in Russia.
Oh,
Vladimir
right.
Putin personally banned this film.
Yeah, so there you have it. What more reason could you possibly need to go and find this film? And I think if it made just a ton of money, and I think it should go into the White House screening room, perhaps. That would be fun, too.
He wouldn't understand. Besides, this is kind of – they made this before the election. So it was kind of, hey, look what happened back in the day. Now it almost comes off as a warning, don't let this happen again.
Yeah.
But so you saw some or most of a documentary that Artie Chick saw and loved. What is it about?
Yeah, well, it's called Leaning Into the Wind, Andy Goldsworthy. And so Goldsworthy is a very unique British artist who is kind of at one with nature, with the kind of art that he does. And so I wanted to give it a shot because Artie Chick raved about, you know, just really liked this film. And so but she also did acknowledge from the get-go that this is very much an arty film. So you need to be okay with one of these documentaries with very minimal narrative and just a lot of, you know, broiling brooks and trees rustling in the wind and just a guy walking through a cave and talking about just the different artistic things that it evokes. And so I think you really need to sort of have some art appreciation background and know who Andy Goldsworthy is or have heard of him. Otherwise, this is just not the kind of documentary that's going to get any kind of traction outside a very slim, arty, art house crowd.
Well, I watched the trailer, and that's when I said, no, I'm okay.
Yeah. And I watched the first 5 minutes. I went, oh, no, this isn't me. So if you have any interest in Andy Goldsworthy and you like nature art type stuff, then meditative kind of things. Artie Chick had said that it's the kind of movie, she said it's a must-see for art lovers and that they should see the film and then go visit a nearby forest, basically, to commune with nature.
Whoa.
So if you want more information on it, you should just check out Artie Chick's review at chickflix.net because then you'll kind of get a artist's perspective on this particular documentary.
Very well. Fair enough. Quick peek ahead to next week. We got another sequel, an action sequel that we're going to see in IMAX, but thankfully on 2D, Pacific Rim Uprising. And I remember I enjoyed the first Pacific Rim.
I remember from the first Pacific Rim that if they ever did a sequel, I need to remember to bring earplugs. So that's what I will be doing.
And I'm also planning on seeing the new, I think it's Wes Anderson, Isle of Dogs.
Yeah, I'm still wavering on that one. You might be solo.
Fine with me. I'll see.
It's like
anything.
A stop motion animated.
That's
thing.
Great. So it was Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah,
and I
loved
that.
That was the only Wes Anderson movie that I've ever liked was Fantastic Mr. Fox.
What is wrong with you?
So
you didn't
so
like
we'll
the Royal
see.
Tenenbaums?
And I'm really torn about Royal Tenenbaums. I liked it.
You didn't
it was
like
okay.
The Grand Budapest Hotel?
It was okay.
You didn't like Moonrise Kingdom?
I mean, but it's yeah. Okay, yeah. You're right. I did like some of those. I liked them well enough. But
they were almost fine.
One of the ones that I'm really torn about because I have conflicting obligations is Midnight Sun, which looks like the total chick flick
I'm
movie.
Giving that to you. It's yours. Take
but
it.
That just did. It's
run with it.
It's going to be really tough to get to. So
it's all yours.
We may have to miss that one.
And no, I'm not going to see Sherlock Gnomes.
Okay, see, I was only going to go see Sherlock Holmes if you took your kid.
Sherlock Gnomes.
So if we're not going to see Sherlock Gnomes, it's a sequel to
Gnomeo
and Juliet, which yeah. I didn't see either, so I won't be too devastated. But, the cat just sneezed.
The cat just sneezed. That's really funny to hear a cat
bless
sneeze.
Bless you, cat. So maybe we'll skip Sherlock Gnomes. And then there are a couple of links that we got that actually look okay.
I'm really excited about Ramen Heads.
Ramen Head.
It's
Ramen Head.
Spiritual Ramen cousin to Hero Dreams of Sushi. And if you haven't seen that, go on Netflix right now and watch one of the best food documentaries you'll ever see, Hero Dreams of Sushi.
Absolutely. So I'm going to cook myself up a nice bowl of ramen noodles and watch Ramen Heads at some point this week.
All right. Quick recap. Tomb Raider was almost fine. It was almost, like when I told the publicist when I walked to the film, unlike the 2001 version, Tomb Raider is a movie.
Wow.
It is a movie, Hannah. This is a movie.
Love, Simon is better than just okay. Love, Simon deserves to get a lot more love than Tomb Raider, and I know that's a idealistic hope, but it really is. It's very good. It's very heartwarming, and so definitely the young adults should all go see it. The older teens will get a lot of out of it. And anybody else who tags along, they're going to enjoy it too.
Skip class, ditch work, and leave your children at home unsupervised to go see The Death of Stalin. You'll be a better person for it.
Yeah, and if for some reason you don't have it near you, you don't catch it in an art house theater around you, put it on your put it in the back of your mind on your mental list for getting it on Netflix or wherever once it becomes available on demand, because you can see it on a home screen too.
Foxtrot is moving in a different kind of way. It's moving in that tragicomic, whoa, there's some drama out there, and it's from Israel this time. Foxtrot is very good.
Yeah, it's in Hebrew, mostly with English subtitles, I'm one-third of the way through, and I can definitely see where this would be a powerful film by the end.
And Leaning into the Wind? I didn't see it.
No, don't lean into this one, really. It's just not worth it. So unless you are an absolute huge art lover, and Andy Goldsworthy is one of your idols.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to The Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.